several people yesterday mentioned the statement, which is absolutely correct, that real-time dynamics is very difficult on the lattice. But nevertheless, I want to tell you about certain several things that we have recently done and which I think are progress. And so certain calculations will be possible, at least will be can be addressed with the things I will mention now. And so mostly it's recent work. So there's a paper before the archive changed this notation. So this is the 8th paper on Hap lattice in March. And then there's a paper after the change. So this is paper number 2,198 in May. So that's a very useful change. And this is work with people in Swansea and in Dublin, Trinity College. So what are the topics I can discuss? The last talk yesterday by Hong Liu mentioned mesons moving in a heat bath in ADS-CFT. I will show you some results of mesons moving in a heat bath from the lattice with a momentum which is not determined by the lattice size. So it's not a multiple of 2 pi over L, but it can be essentially arbitrary depending on how you set it up. Then another signature for the SQGP has been that germanium survives at high temperatures, say 2 times DC, also based on the lattice. But that was all based on quench calculations. So I'll show you some first results on germanium above DC. Where's this laser thing? Germanium above DC in dynamical lattice simulations. And then most of the talk, actually, I will spend on transport coefficients. Well, it's well known, of course, that the problem is to do the analytic continuation from imaginary time to real time and to extract the real-time spectral function from the lattice correlator. And the standard way to do this is to use the maximal entropy method. And I will show that the standard routine that has been used in the past up to now is actually inherently unstable as you take omega to 0. So this will not allow you to get your spectral function in the small omega limit. I'll show how to fix it, and then show some first results we have obtained, which indicate that the result is at least stable and robust. And so the first result will be on the electrical conductivity in the quark-gluon plasma above TC. And I should note, of course, that this fix of the maximal entropy method has only potential can only potentially work at strongly coupled theories, because at weakly coupled theories, it's essentially impossible to get transport coefficient from the lattice. As we pointed out 5 years ago, and this will not change that. So the only place where it can be where it's applicable would be in a strongly coupled case. Okay, several people, of course, in ADS-CFT pointed out where the theory is right or wrong. So I just want to mention that I have no supersymmetry. It's not conformal. It's asymptotically free, and C is fixed, and 3, and F is 0. Or 2 in this talk. Okay, so first I tell you just how you, in principle, how spectral functions are related to lattice correlators. And then just to set the stage, we show you a result at zero temperature, and then go to high temperature and non-zero momentum, and talk about this new formulation, and show you first results for the conductivity and and the results for germanium. Okay, so the ultimate motivation for this work is from transport in high temperature QCD. So we would like to know the shear viscosity, bulk viscosity, conductivity, the fusion coefficients, because they characterize how strongly coupled the quark-gluon plasma is, since essentially they are proportional to the mean free path. And so if the system is strongly coupled, you expect that all these transport coefficients are very small. Now, the framework I use will be that of the Kubo relation, so linear response. So this is just a standard slide. So conductivity can be extracted from the spectral density of current-current correlators, where the current is the electromagnetic current, and the viscosity from the spectral density of the energy-momentum correlator, or precisely the traces part of the spatial energy-momentum correlator. And then you have to evaluate the spectral functions in the slope that omega goes to 0, so in the limit that omega goes to 0, so it's the slope at 0 frequency. And I will use these Kubo formulation, these Kubo relations to talk about transport coefficients. Now, on the lattice, of course, you don't compute these spectral functions, but you compute a Euclidean lattice correlator. So that's G as a function of tau or as a function of the Matsubara frequency that's related to the spectral density via this dispersion relation. Or on the second line, G of tau is related to rho via this integral equation, which is essentially a Laplace transform. And this kernel is as it is there. And so to compute spectral densities from this integral relation has been revived several years ago by Asakawa Hanatsuda using this maximal entropy method. So what's the program? You compute these lattice correlators numerically. You just get, this will give you a finite amount of information at temporal points between 0 and n tau, which is the extent of the lattice in the temporal direction. And then somehow you have to invert this integral equation. And so one way to do that is to use the maximal entropy method. And I will explain various bits that go into this method along the way. So just to see as a warm-up problem, let's first look at some two zero-temperature results. Zero temperature is slightly easier because you have confinement, so you have bound states, and you can compare with usual methods to extract masses of particles. So this particular example is done in data generated by UKQCD and RBC for domain wall fermions. And this is the ground state. And so the spectral density in the pseudoscalar channel looks something like this. So these types of plots will come a lot in this talk. So what's plotted here is the spectral density divided by omega squared as a function of omega. And there are some peaks here. There are actually three curves here for three different combinations of valence quarks. And for every combination, there's a peak. And so this peak corresponds to the ground state. So this is the pion. The dashed lines, the three dashed lines here, are the effective masses that are obtained by using conventional Koch fits. And of course, these agree nicely with the result that comes out of this MEM analysis. And then there's a second bump here, which is blown up in the inset. And I will comment on that in a minute. So in the in another channel, it looks essentially the same. This is in the vector channel where the particle is heavier, so the peaks are moved to the right. But again, it agrees nicely with the MEM analysis, and the conventional fits nicely agree. And again, there is this second bump here. Turns out this second bump is something you encounter very often in these calculations, and they are due to lattice artifacts, and essentially the difference between the continuum and lattice dispersion relation. And you can study that in the free field limit. And so this is a study for overlap and domain wall fermions. So this is, again, rho divided by omega squared as a function of omega. And the peak, of course, is gone now because this is a free field calculation. But then there's a second peak at larger frequencies, essentially frequencies of order of the lattice spacing between 1 and 2. And so this is a lattice artifact. The dotted line is the continuum result. And it's due to the fact that you have a finite Diophant zone on the lattice. OK, so that was zero temperature. Go to finite temperature now. I will only talk about meson spectral functions. So here are just the definitions and show results just below TC and above TC. So below TC, you have mesons in the heat bath that, if you look at non-zero momentum, may be moving with a dispersion relation or maybe with a different dispersion relation. And in these correlators, at least you're sufficiently far above TC, the quarks will be deconfined, and so you don't have bound states anymore, but just essentially the continuum contribution. So these are the, this is work done in Swansea. So I have one ensemble below TC and two above TC, so roughly 0.6 times TC and 1.5 and 2.25 TC. And they're very fine lattices. And we use staggered quarks to compute the mesons, and I'll show mostly results for light quarks. So So the bare quark mass is small in units of the temperature. I want to talk about non-zero momentum. So there's a variety of reasons why that's interesting. One is the talks we heard yesterday. You can have mesons moving in the heat bath. If you go to very small momentum, you can look for hydrodynamic structure in the correlation function spectral densities, and maybe many other reasons. So I'll talk about spectral functions at non-zero momentum. On the lattice, of course, your momenta is quantized in units of 2 pi over L, which kind of limits the possible momenta you have access to. And so for this, we use something called twisted boundary conditions, saying that your quark fields in space don't have the standard periodic boundary conditions, but there's an extra angle here, a twist angle. And a meson consists of two quarks, so there are two angles here, such that the momentum is a combination of the standard momentum and the combination of different twist angles. And by choosing these different twist angles in convenient ways and combining it in all possible ways you can imagine, you can have a range of momenta between zero and whatever you want. So with four, we did four different angles, and we have about 20 different momenta in this temperature range between 0 and 5. So to see the effect of the momentum on the correlators, I show the ratio of correlators here. This is in the pseudoscalar and the scalar channel. So what is plotted here is the Euclidean correlator at non-zero momentum normalized by the correlator at zero momentum. And so this plot, as a function of the temporal extent of the lattice, so this plot gives you a measure of the relative effect by increasing the momentum. So the highest line here is at the smallest momentum, and then when I increase the momentum, the correlator drops down like this. This is at high temperature, 1.5 dC, and so the pseudoscalar and the scalar overlap, so it is chiral symmetry restoration. But as you can see, the effect of increasing momentum is of the order of a few percent, 5% down to 15%, but you're perfectly capable of measuring these different correlators and seeing the effect of increasing the momentum. What is the what? Oh, these are staggered fermions. And so there are two signals in this correlator. There's a minus one to the time step, which does this. So for these momenta, the effect is, say, up to 15%, which is actually not so far away from what you get for free staggered fermions. So this is the same plot, but now for free fermions with the same momenta, same lattice momenta, and the effect is also up to 10%. So it's an indication that we are in the high temperature phase, and free fermions may be a good reference point. But if you're in the confinement phase, so this is the cold phase, pseudoscalar, the effect is much larger. So this is roughly the same momentum range, but the effect is down to, is say, a 40% effect by increasing the momentum. Whereas in the high temperature phase, it was only 10, 15%. So these are the correlators. Now we would like to get the spectral density. So this is the first set of slides on MEM. So it's an ill-posed inversion problem because we know the Euclidean correlator, G of tau. I would like to extract the spectral density rho of omega. But this G of tau, of course, is only known at the lattice points that have been simulated, so say order 10 points, whereas rho of omega is a continuous function which you can parameterize, say, with maybe 1,000 points in some range of omega, say omega between 0 and 5 in lattice units. And so you cannot use simple inversion because you don't have enough information. And in the MEM approach, this is helped by providing some prior information. And in fact, the only information that you provide is it's very minimal. So first, its spectral density is positive for positive frequencies, which is what it should be, just from field theory. And then we provide the asymptotic behavior at large omega, where you, in principle, can say I have access to that via perturbative calculations. Yes. Yes. So what it's as I say, it's ill-posed. So what you're computing is, in fact, the most probable spectral function that gives you this correlator. Well, the correlator will be slightly different. The whole. So, no, actually, this MEM tends to work even much better at zero temperature where the spectral function is not smooth, but where you have peaks. And I don't have plots for that, but at zero temperature, you can find the ground state, excited state, next state, and compare them with traditional fits to those states. At high temperature, what is more problematic, well, not problematic, is that the function is smooth, and so you have nothing to compare with. But so you're not in this framework. What you're constructing is the most probable spectral function in the way I will define Nell. So this is a probability distribution. Say I want to find the maximum of this, the most probable spectral density given the correlator and prior information. And then this is rewritten in some identity for conditional probabilities. And the two bits that appear here are one bit is concerned with the data, because this is what is the probability to get the correlator given some model function. So this is what you do in a standard chi-square fit. And the second bit is independent of the data, but this models your spectral density given your prior information. And in the MEM approach, this term is written as an entropy term. And so rho is the function you want, and M of omega is the way you implement this prior information, and that's called the default model. And so the default model is only fixed at asymptotic omega, where it's by dimension, on dimensional ground, it's taken to be omega squared. And then you combine those two contributions in this probability distribution, and you try to extremize this. And so the L bit is determined by the data. So if you have very good data, this will help you determine the spectral density. The S bit is just determined by the prior information. So if you have bad data, then the prior information will win. Well, so the point is that this is the basic problem, that correlation functions always look like this, and you have to extract something out of it, but they will differ in detail. And so if you have a bunch of peaks, it will be a sum of exponentials. If it's smooth, it may be some power law function, and you should be able to distinguish those. Yeah. Yeah. So they will be close. Yeah. But this is just a technical slide which has to do with the staggering of the data. So we have to do it independently on even and odd time slices. Let me skip this. And so this is this first example of a reconstructed correlator. So the data points here are the ones that are computed on the lattice. And the blue line is the line that has been computed with MEM and then put back into the integral equation and evaluated the Euclidean correlator like that. And so you see that it reconstructs the data. It falls on the data quite well, which of course is the first requirement. And it also shows that you need precise data in order to do this. That's shown a little bit better here. So this is in the scalar channel where the error symbols are larger, and then it doesn't go through the data points, but it's more biased towards the default model, and so it's off. So you need tiny statistical errors as a certainly prerequisite to make this work. Okay, now some results. This is below TC in the pseudoscalar channel. So this is the pion peak, say, and this is the second peak, which we think is a lattice artifact because it's at omega in lattice units, which is between 1 and 2. And if I now crank up the momentum, the pion will start moving. So this is at the first non-zero momentum. And so it's slowly moving to the right. So this would be the meson, the pion moving through the heat bath, but it's below TC still. At the origin is the cause of all the troubles, which I will talk about in the second part of the talk. No, the width is not taken seriously. For the width, to investigate the width, you need much more statistics than did to say something sensible about that. The position of the peak should take sensible. So this is a pseudoscalar channel. Well, this is, okay, this is a folklore statement, but at finite temperature, I don't know if any real study that pins it down. This was in the pseudoscalar channel. This is in the vector channel where you see the same behavior. The particle is heavier, so the effect of the momentum is slightly less, but it's still moving to the right. The structure, these plots were done with the old algorithm, so the structure of zero momentum is an artifact. So I'll come to that. So I'll come to that now. So we found serious problems in applying MEM above TC. And so we looked into that only very recently. And it turns out that there was something inherently unstable in the algorithm at zero omega. And this brings me to the second part of the MEM routine, which is the reduction step. This is slightly more technical. So what's the reduction step? Well, the kernel that appears in the integral equation is a function of omega and tau, the imaginary time. So if I discretize both, this is a matrix which is not a square matrix. So n omega is the number of points I use to discretize the omega axis, which is, say, order 1,000. And capital N here is the number of lattice points, or number of lattice points divided by 2, so which is of order 10. And so the problem is that we have the spectral density here at the bottom as a function of omega, which is, say, order 1,000 points. And we would like to get information, take information from the Euclidean correlator, which is only 10 things that are known about it. So somehow we have to reduce it from, say, 1,000 degrees of freedom to a problem with only 10 degrees of freedom. And in Brian's algorithm, this is done with this singular value decomposition, which says that this non-square matrix can be decomposed in a specific way. So there is another matrix U, which has the same dimensions. Then there is a diagonal matrix, where the quantities on the diagonal are the singular values. And then there is another square matrix at the end. And so this is just a theorem that says that any non-square matrix can be decomposed like this. And the proposal by Brian is to use the column vectors of this matrix U, which have length. There are I equals 1 to n of them. There are n of them, and they have length n omega, to use these column vectors as basis functions for the subspace in which you do this reduction. And so these vectors are orthogonal by the fact that these matrix U is orthogonal. Is orthogonal, yeah. So these basis functions U are orthogonal. They're not complete, of course, because the matrix is not a square matrix. And so the proposal is to now expand this the spectral density rho in terms of these basis functions U, like here. And so this reduces your unknown function of omega to a function which only depends on n coefficients. And so this gives the reduction from, say, 1,000 degrees of freedom to order 10 degrees of freedom. And omega here is, again, the default model. And so these functions U are the kind of the basis functions that span the subspace to which you did the projection. So if I plot these basis functions as a function of omega, and that's shown in this plot. So these are the basis functions 1 to 4 as a function of omega. And they are orthogonal, and so basis function I will cross 0 I times, so they have all kind of nice properties. But if I zoom in at zero frequency, at the small frequency limit, I actually find that all seem to diverge. Although they're still normalizable, they all seem to diverge. And this is because the kernel itself diverges at small frequency. And so this property of the kernel is inherited by all these basis functions. And this is a problem, because this is precisely where our interest is for transport, is in the limit omega goes to zero. And as a result, you find that when you try to do this, MEM will not always converge, so the routine doesn't work. When it works, it will depend on your discretization in omega space. So if I discretize it differently at small omega, I will get another result. And so it's numerically unstable. But this can now easily be, once you realize this can easily be modified, essentially just by taking out this 1 over omega divergence and multiplying the kernel by omega. And so rather than talking about rho, I will talk about rho bar, which is just rho divided by omega. This seems very easy. So now the kernel is finite. When you go to 0 omega, I will reconstruct, instead of rho, I'll reconstruct rho divided by omega. And since these basis functions are not complete, actually I'm reducing now to a different subspace, so a subspace with different properties. And the better property here is that it has a smooth limit when omega goes to 0. So here are the basis functions for this modified kernel. And now if you zoom in around omega, they all just have a finite intercept here. And so nothing weird happens when I take omega to 0. So now I parameterize this rho bar in terms of these modified basis functions. And then I can do exactly the same as before, except that we show now that it's numerically stable. And there's one more thing. We still have to provide a default model for this. So the standard default model went with omega squared. So if I divide by omega, then the default model just goes with omega. But I want to get the intercept now, because this is rho divided by omega. So I want to evaluate rho bar at omega equals to zero. And if I use this default model, this would go to zero linearly. So that default model simply doesn't allow for a non-zero intercept. And so we change the default model and put in a parameter here, which at least gives the opportunity to have a non-zero intercept and not excludes it from the start. Because this introduces an extra parameter, B, which we will vary to assess the default model dependence in this calculation. And so the conductivity is now given by rho. Well, as always, it's the limit of rho of omega divided by omega. Omega goes to zero, or it's the intercept of this modified spectral density. So here is rho divided by omega. So in previous plot, I always showed rho divided by omega squared, which kind of brings up the low omega bit and suppresses the high omega bit. And so these peaks here, which are now look now really high, were equal height with those peaks here on the old scale. But this is the spectral density that comes out. And of course, now we're interested in this small omega region here, because from that we can get the conductivity. So here is the zoom in of the small omega region in the high temperature phase at 1.5 TC. And so it has a finite intercept, which is what we want, of course. There are three curves here. There are actually four curves here. The dots here are taken with by discretizing the range of omega in 2,000 points. And then the full line is by discretizing it with 1,000 points. And the dots lie exactly on top of the full line, which shown that reducing the discretization in omega has no effect. And this is completely stable against variations of delta omega. Then the other differences are by changing this parameter B, which appears in the default model, and varying that over some range and to see how much it depends on that. And as expected, it has some dependence on that, but the kind of a ballpark intercept is more or less the same. Say again? The error bars are kind of complicated error bars because they tell you about the significance of the peak in a certain region. So they are not translationally invariant in the horizontal direction. And it's very difficult to do the same analysis of error bars in this tiny region here. So we just take the variation with respect to the default model as an indication of sensitivity to this. If I go to the hotter lattice, so this is 2.25 TC, I find roughly the same behavior. So there's some dependence on the default model dependence, and then there's an intercept, which is very similar. So these temperatures are 1.5 and 2.25 TC. So just from reading off the intercept, I can now immediately read off the conductivity, just divide by 6. And so the conductivity is, say, 0.4, where the error is only coming from the uncertainty in the default model dependence of the MEM analysis. So it's a systematic error. And this, of course, is a small number. And in weakly coupled case, you expect the conductivity to go as 1 over alpha squared, which is very large. And here it's of order 1. I haven't precisely looked at that, actually. So 5 minutes? Okay, so talk too fast. So then this last topic of the talk is charmonium. So what happens with charmonium or other heavy quark states when you put them in the quark-gluon plasma? And this, goes, as we heard yesterday, goes back to J psi suppression and so on. And so previous lattice studies were all done in quenched QCD. And they've shown that the J psi in eta sub c may survive up to 2 TC. And so the obvious question is, what happens in dynamical QCD? And so this is work done together with people in Dublin, so the Trinlat people, because they have great experience in doing dynamical simulations on highly anisotropic lattices. And you need anisotropic lattices here because you want a very large temporal, many points in the temporal direction in order to apply these MEM techniques. But for dynamical simulations, you cannot use such a similarly large volume. And so this is done on very anisotropic lattices, so the ratio of the spatial lattice spacing to the temporal lattice spacing is roughly 6. And so the temporal lattice spacing is roughly 7 GeV. And then there are two volumes, 8 cubes and 12 cubes. And so now we can change n tau in steps of 1. So they'll change the temperature in steps of 7 GeV and do a temperature scan over a wide range of n taus. So 32 corresponds to just above TC and go then up to about 2 times TC. And so this is just above TC. So this is the typical quality of plots we get here. So these are the 4 channels that we looked at as a function of omega. This is again rho divided by omega squared. And so the peaks that you see, say around 4 GeV, those are the states. Those peaks correspond to the states at 0 temperature. And then these second peaks here correspond to these kind of lattice artifacts, we think, from other studies. I should say the lattice spacing is a bit coarser here than in the previous studies. And that's why these peaks are not very well separated. If you take the lattice spacing, if you reduce the lattice spacing, then these peaks will be better separated and you have a better view. Here are just the effect of changing the temperature just on the correlation function. So without doing MEM on one set of data, but not at different temperatures. And this result is very similar to what you find in the quenched studies. So on the left are the S waves. And here, if I increase the temperature, which is going up in the J psi and going down in the eta sub C, it's an effect of a few percent in the correlator. Whereas in the P waves, it's a much bigger effect. So it's an effect, say, of a factor of 2 here, actually. And here's an effect, say, 50 to 75%. And so there is very little temperature dependence in the S waves and much larger temperature dependence in the P waves. So if you then go to MEM, you find a typical example like this. So this is the J psi. So again, the peaks here at the lowest temperature correspond to the particle. These peaks here are probably lattice artifacts. And now we change the temperature slowly, so 32, 24, 20, 18, and 16 for n tau. And it's kind of a difficult plot, but you see that at 32, the peak is here. Then at 20, it seems to disappear. It just comes back a little bit at 18, but at 16, it seems to be all gone. And so if we take roughly as an estimate where the peak disappears between 20 and 16, this would say that the J psi melts at a temperature between 1.7 and 2 TC. This is very different in the P wave. So this is the actual vector channel. So here I went down to n tau equals 16. Here n tau is much larger, so it's much lower temperatures. So this is 32, 31, 30, 29, 28. And so up to 29, there is still a peak visible. But then when I go down to 28, the peak has gone. And when you go down to lower temperatures, it doesn't come back. And so you can take an estimate that n tau is 28. It's roughly the temperature where the actual vector particle disappears. And so that would correspond to temperatures of roughly 1.2 times TC. OK, so I talked about lattice QCD and spectral functions. First, at 0 temperature, where you get a nice peak when you have a nice meson there. And then at high temperature, and showed you we can compute at non-zero momentum, so we have mesons moving through the low temperature plasma. And at high temperature, the standard algorithm doesn't work. You show this analytically that there is a real problem there, but it's easy to modify. And then this result for the conductivity is the first result in using MEM. And so hopefully there will be more results. And then I also showed results for germanium in a dynamical lattice simulation. And these results more or less confirm the quench studies that have been done before. Okay. The one in non-zero momentum? Oh, no, the other ones, the germanium, yeah. Yes. Yes. I would say that the effect in the eta sub c is just 2 to 3%, so it's a very small effect compared to the effect in the p wave channels. So I wouldn't immediately say that there should be the same. It should be the same, have the same origin. And actually, in the p wave, you. Mm-hmm. Well, they both melt. So these states are gone. And so there's. But it's not melting. It's only melting at the very lowest. So only the one with n, where n tau equals 16, it has probably melted. But the other ones, it's not melted yet. I don't know, but I probably some of the Bielefeld people have looked at that. But I don't have an immediate reason why one goes down and the other three goes up. Yeah, it could be that should be a transport coefficient in the J psi, say. Yes. Yeah, so the more or less important improvement here is to work at smaller lattice spacing so that the peak, the small energy peak is separated from the high energy peak. And then by increasing statistics, because these are done on fairly small volumes, you can increase statistics quite easily, you could hope to address that. But before increasing statistics, say, I think it's important to do this first on smaller lattice spacings. You can investigate it by changing, yeah. Probably, but yes. So this gives a qualitative picture, whether there is a bump or not.